I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got really good news for you, which is that it's based on a really simple idea, that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. So every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this with us, so please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who you think deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations at teacherslounge@niu.edu. That's teacherslounge@niu.edu. And today on the show, we are joined by Juliet Madero and Carla Jeffrey. They're biology instructors at Highland Community College and also created and run the college's Women Plus in Science Club, where they unite students across science disciplines to be mentors and keep them motivated by highlighting the work of prominent women in science, from famous historical figures like Marie Curie to women winning Nobels today. They bring in guest speakers, women who work across a variety of fields, from veterinarians to micropaleontologists, to talk about both the challenges women face in these fields, but also the opportunities they can help each other reach. We also talk about both of their careers in science, a little bit about Juliet's work with the Bird City program for all the birders out there, and a little bit about Carla's family full of scientists. All right, well, without further ado, let's just jump right into my conversation with Highland Community College biology instructors Carla Jeffrey and Juliet Madero. And we start off with Juliet telling us just a little bit about how much work science teachers have to do when they start using a new textbook.
So it's making sure everything is accessible, and yeah, I've been up till midnight every night.
Oh, wow. So is this work that you don't have to do a lot? Like, does this come up?
I'm hoping that this, because it's a new book, then I can use my same lectures next fall, and then I can sleep next fall. But yeah, that's what happens when you get a new book. You're really just planning ahead.
Well, good. I hope that the staying up till midnight doing this is not like a regular
no.
thing for you.
Well, I'm teaching the same classes I taught last semester, so I did all of the stuff, the accessibility stuff, and then now I kind of get to roll with it. So I'm a little luckier in that situation. It just kind of depends on which classes we're teaching at what time.
And then what classes are you guys teaching right now, like this semester?
I'm teaching microbiology. I have two sections, a morning and a night section. And then I have an online class for gen eds called Microbes and Society. So
Microbes
all
and
microbiology
Society.
This semester.
Oh, fun. How about
and
you?
For me, I teach an intro to ecology, and it's fully online. Students have a kit, and they do their labs at home and upload their data. And then in person, I have a biology major course, a second semester sequence. So those students are really fun because they're interested in biology. And then my other class is
nutrition
online as well.
Do you like doing online classes?
There is pros and cons.
Sure.
The pros are I can schedule things in, I can grade when I can, when I want, but then you don't get that instant feedback, so you don't know how inspired they are. You're like, I hope they're listening to my lectures, and I try to throw in some jokes and see if they send me a feedback later saying, oh, your lecture really helped me, and some do.
I was going to say, you do hopefully get that feedback sometimes, even if it's a little like 2 weeks later, someone's like, that was a good joke.
Pretty much. Or I can tell if they did not use my lectures during their test.
Or my study guide.
Right.
I have a joke, why did the fungus and the algae get married? Because they took a liking to each other.
Oh, that's classic.
So it's in the lectures, it's on the study guide, and then it's on the online exam.
That's smart.
And the students who have looked at my study guide, they get it and they get it right, and then the others are just, I give them all credit, but they're just trying to explain it like out of nowhere, and so I can tell.
I can imagine the person who has not been keeping up with it, and they get on the test and they're like, I did not know there was going to be a joke section
right?
here.
Yes. I had another student who went from not doing okay on the proctored exams, we have one for every module, to getting an A on the third one, and his feedback to me was, wow, that study guide was really helpful. And I thought, yes, finally. Took you three rounds to listen to me to actually use it.
Yeah, you're like, that kind of is the whole point of the study guide, actually. For when you're doing, like, you were mentioning the, like, online classes where they get a kit to do labs and things at home. Like, what's in the kit?
So the labs are trying to get them to collect data related to ecology.
Yeah.
So one kit is catch and release, but they use beans. So their kit might have materials for them to pretend these beans are animals, and they mark them, and they count. And
oh, they're catching and releasing the beans.
Yes, yes.
Pretty easy prey, but yeah.
To symbolize whatever's outside in nature. Another one is ping pong balls with egg cartons, and they throw the ping pong balls trying to colonize an island, but then they roll a die to make one go extinct. So it shows that bigger islands, farther islands, are harder to colonize, but smaller islands are more likely to go extinct. So they get the relationship of things like the Galapagos Islands and how some were more successful than others.
It feels like we're bordering on like board game territory.
A little bit, yeah. There's a die and ping pong balls in their kits.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that feels like a Risk pandemic style board game. How long have both of you guys been at Highland?
For me, I've been in Highland for 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I taught 2 years in Iowa at a community college in Iowa, and then I've been here since 2006.
2006, and what about you?
And I'm 17 years, so since 2009. And my previous career, I have four kids. I stayed home with them for a little while and coached middle school boys track and then high school girls track. But I was also a seventh grade science teacher for a few years.
Oh, fun. And so you guys have been working together for a long time then. And so, you have the Women Plus in Science Club. How long has that been around? And can we talk a little bit about kind of the origins there?
Yeah, so I had to think back and look at some old emails, and I was probably married for a year, and I was I'm currently an Earth Club advisor, so we have an environmental awareness club as well. And I was an honors program director, and I don't know if maybe I thought I was not busy enough, but I just remember, and it was May, so the semester was ending, and I said, I think I want to start a club for women in science. So I think it was because my involvement with the other club and honors, where I got to see the caliber of our students doing extra research, and I think I just felt there was a need for them to meet other individuals that like science. And I just remember walking down the hall saying, Carla, let's start a club. And her face, though, yeah, that was her face was like, how much work's involved? What do we need to do? And I think I must have taught summer session as well. So I was busy in the summer, and I remember contacting the club VP to say, how do we start a club? Because the other club already was started for me, so I knew we had to have a mission statement. And I looked at what other colleges have done. So there's some similar clubs out there, but we created our own mission statement. And I think our goal ultimately became getting people connected and keeping them motivated, getting them to meet other people in science. And we wanted to make it really inclusive too. So our club is a mix of people, including employees too, that sometimes come and support.
And about how many years ago is this?
2017.
Okay, so that's, we're getting close on a decade now.
Yes, and even with COVID, we are still moving along with our club. We had, some of our activities is having old former alumni come and be a presenter and show students how they went through Highland, how they moved on from Highland, transferred, and got into their career. So even through COVID, we had former alumni still speak through us through Zoom. And so we were one of the clubs that were actually still pretty active when we could not come in person.
Yeah. Carla, what about you when, she asked if you wanted to do it with her about the gap that you guys were hoping to fill with it, of like why this is something that was important and a club that needed to be at Highland?
I think for me, a lot of it is just about scientists who are underrepresented, primarily women, but other groups as well. And just, a lot of things are starting to come of light. I've recently been teaching out of a new textbook as well, and it's like, there's a woman that invented this or that, and you never heard about these people until more recently. And so just, looking for accomplishments and just highlighting that. And then also just making connections. We do a lot of activities with anywhere from first graders to high school kids, and we always get really good help with our Women in Science members because they're really active and they engage with the kids really well.
Has it evolved, what it's looked like since 2017, or have you had that core mission from the start?
I think we've streamlined it. I feel like our first year we had three speakers, and now looking back, now we do one a year, maybe one or two. it definitely grew. We probably had 5 or 6 members, and I think our highest point, we probably have 20 or so on our email list. But a lot of active ones, and when they graduate, they're like, we look forward to coming back to be a speaker too. So yeah. Yes, we definitely keep in touch with a lot of them. I think it evolved to getting more of the campus involved, right, too, because it's a club for our members, but then we try to educate people about women in science. So like Women's History Month right now, mm-hmm, we have pretty active event where we have a trivia contest for anyone to enter, and our club members made a poster of whatever women scientists they want. And so any student on campus can find these posters, answer these trivia questions, and they win a prize. They win a book and a glass that has Women in Science scientist on it. The book is Rachel Ignatz.
I don't know how to say her last name.
And she wrote a book about women in science.
I was going to say, you get like a big trophy with like Marie Curie's face on it or something.
No, the glass is a new addition this year. We thought, let's give them something practical besides the book, and they can read and drink their water.
Exactly. So, and it's also, so it's something that you guys have speakers that come in maybe once, maybe twice a year or so usually, and then there's the kind of like mentorship part of it. Like, if you're, you know, someone who's interested in being a part of it or someone who just like recently joined, like how are they most often interacting with the club?
Usually we have bi-monthly meetings. And yeah, so usually coming to the meetings, sometimes we just do fun science experiments. We often make elephant toothpaste, which seems pretty simple, but kids from all ages love it, you know, including I do it in my college classes at the end of the semester.
And what is it?
Elephant toothpaste.
I'm not sure if I know what it is.
There's a reaction. There's
it's
yeast.
A mixture of yeast, hydrogen peroxide, and dish soap.
Yes. And so you get this concoction going in a 2-liter bottle, and then you put dye kind of around the mouth of the bottle, and then the experiment, once it starts to get going, it foams up, and so then it comes out kind of colorful, like, what's the toothpaste from the 70s,
Aquafresh.
80s. Aquafresh.
Yes.
So it has a stripe, the toothpaste. But elephant, so it's big. It's a big foamy thing all over the table. And I think the dramatic size of it is what any age loves, because we all still like, wow.
Right, it fits into the baking soda volcano category of exciting explosions that everyone of every age is excited about.
Yes. I remember we had first graders in, your daughter
was in there
too, and they were just super cute. But then I said, you know, they said, oh, can we touch it? I said, no, you better not touch it. I said, but you can get really close. You can get about 6 inches away from it. And this one little boy said, I don't know what 6 inches is. He goes, oh, okay, wait a minute. We have to tailor our teaching to our audience here. Yeah. That was cute.
That's really fun. So, and then the kind of more mentorship part of it, can you talk about too?
I think sharing stories, sharing our experiences, and hearing what some of our graduates have also gone through, they touch upon how it may be difficult in some areas to feel accepted in some aspects. I'm trying to think of examples, but even just one of our students becoming a medical doctor, you know, you really have to work harder sometimes to get credit and acknowledged for some of the work you do. Looking back to, I mean, I've experienced it myself, and you want to prepare the students. You want to prepare our students to know it's not always going to be a piece of cake. You have to work hard to fit in some of the non-traditional roles.
Right. And maybe something that, like, again, if you're a woman in college, you probably intuitively might think, but hearing the kind of real-world examples of what that can look like, you know, again, hopefully to have the connections like you guys and have people who are more mentors can help that. And also, again, I was curious about, again, how your own kind of journey through academia and through science kind of fed into this, because, you know, like, it happens all the time where I feel like starting a club like this, or really anything, could be like, oh, like I had great mentors when I was coming up and I want to recreate that and make sure that other people do. Or it's the opposite, which is like, I didn't have that and it was really hard, as it is for so many women in science and in a lot of fields. And I wanted to make sure that there was some infrastructure to like support them. And I was curious for either of you kind of how you've thought about, you know, like kind of how your past experience feeds into this.
Basically, I grew up getting pretty good grades in high school and all that. My dad was a doctor. And then my sister, 2 years older than me, she was planning to be a doctor, so she majored in pre-med, University of Illinois. She majored in chemistry. And I was trying to decide where I was going 2 years later, and so I ended up at University of Illinois, which I kind of, maybe I should go somewhere different, but it just made sense.
Pre-med too, or?
Yes, pre-med, but I chose biology because that was not chemistry.
So just to be different, or that was just something that you were more interested in?
No, just to be different. Okay. Not really sure what I was doing. So I did get
my older brother my whole life, yeah.
Yeah. So I did get my biology degree. I actually studied abroad in Scotland my junior year, and so I had to decide if I was going to take the MCAT. And I just decided that I didn't really want to take the MCAT. And I think back then I wouldn't have done very well because, you know, never having to study in high school. Getting to college, some classes were easy, especially if they were, you know, math problems and things like that. But the biology was actually, I didn't understand it as much as I probably should have. But looking back, I'm a visual person. I need to hear it and see it. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, there were no screens. There was just someone up in front of the class talking. And so I just felt a little defeated and just kind of unsure, you know, about my abilities. And then, so I studied in Scotland, I didn't take the MCAT. I graduated in biology. I started looking for jobs, which were basically pharmaceutical sales. And then a friend of mine was in grad school at U of I for getting a master's of science in teaching. And so it was a teaching degree along with the master's. So I took graduate biology and graduate education classes in order to teach basically 6th through 12th grade. So I didn't really know I wanted to be a teacher until I was like, well, I guess I'll get into this program and see.
So it was really kind of a leap of faith, like, hopefully this is something that I'm into?
Yes, but I didn't really have a lot of guidance along the way. I think at a big school, I feel like, you know, I had a biology class with 1,200 people, and that's what I tell my students here. You know, make those connections because you have people who are willing to work with you and help you learn, and that's really what I probably could have used as well. So I probably would have benefited from something like Highland myself. So I like to just try to give my students, whether they're in the club or just in my class, just kind of the confidence and to try to help them see how they learn and what they need and to give them the skills to kind of go on from here.
I grew up in Ottawa. I'm first generation immigrant, so my parents pretty much encouraged me to work hard. School's important. My dad's biggest thing is no one can ever take away your education. So college was no question, but I did not know what I wanted to do. But here's my first inspiration, a seventh grade teacher at Marquette High School. Oh, this was St. Pat's grade school, Mrs. Gail Bianchi. I just remember her inspiring me to be interested in science. And I loved the rock collection and the movies she would show. And then one of the biggest things was a hike out in Laredo Taft. So.
Oh, really? I was thinking Ottawa, you know, my mind immediately went
Starred Rock. Well, we did Starred Rock.
Yeah.
But we had a 3-day, it was an eighth grade retreat, I guess it was like a final thing before high school. And that just meant more because it was away from everyone. And she took us on a hike and we laid in the snow looking at the trees. And I just remember that moment. And I have my students do that, younger kids. If I take them on a hike, I say, look out, and the snow falling on their faces. And my hope is that I bring back some of her inspiration, but I put it aside. I remember my parents saying, no, computer's the way to go. Be a computer science major. And I was like, well, it was all about money. Let's just make money. You don't have to enjoy what you do. Just make some money.
Yeah.
And jumping to NAU is where I went for my undergrad. I was a computer science major for 1 week, and I changed my major right away. I hated the classes. It was not for me, and I said, I'm independent. I'm going to change my major. I'm not going to listen to what my parents do.
I'm sure they were thrilled.
Oh, yeah. And I have an older sister, and she was an English journalism major.
Oh, and so she was kind of paving the way of a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. But for me, I just said, this is my life. I'm going to change my major, and best thing I ever did. At that point, I was veterinary medicine. That was my interest. I love animals. Let me go into veterinary. But it was when I met another teacher, Dr. Bethia King at NIU, and she took a chance on me. Like, that was the biggest moment where... Mm-hmm. Well, I got an A in her class, and she reached out to students who did well in their class saying, you did well, do you want to do research with me? Because the professors like to have some undergraduate help for their research. And for her research was parasitic wasps. So she wanted someone to help count wasps and all the little tiny things to help her get published with the research and what I would learn too. And I just remember feeling so nervous, but I went to her office and I said, I got this letter, I would like to work with you. And she said, oh, come on in. And I'm still friends with her today. And just her way to motivate and encourage people to go into this field. I mean, if I didn't meet her, I would not have gone to grad school and would not have become a teacher myself. And I remember in high school, I said, I will never be a teacher. So it's just funny. I didn't like.
You didn't like school much?
I don't think I had teachers that inspired me in high school the way later. So I'm like, oh, I don't like high school. I never want to be a teacher. This is hard work. I want to do something else. But it was grad school where I was a teaching assistant where I really enjoyed it. But yeah, but Bethia King is who encouraged me to do some research. And then grad school is where I kind of changed from research to teaching.
Well, and again, like it sounds like you had, whether it be elementary school or through college, some, you know, women in science who not just like were good teachers, but especially with the college case they mentioned at NIU, like wanted to invest in you, which I think is a crucial difference too, right? Like we have lots of good teachers, but then you like leave the class after you're done and maybe never talk to them ever again. But like this was a different kind of relationship.
Right. Even here at Highland, I took a sabbatical and went back to NIU. And the first person I want to see is Bethia, and I took her class again. And it was more for fun because I already had my degree, but this was a chance to get some further education. And it was fun catching up with her. She met my daughter, and my daughter's interested in science too, of course.
How old is your daughter?
She's 7 now, about to turn 8. And she is learning the same things my students are learning right now. She was e-learning yesterday, and she was naming parts of a plant that I just taught my biology class. So it was pretty funny.
And she's getting in on the elephant toothpaste, too?
There's a fun video of Carla and my daughter making elephant toothpaste where she wanted to touch the heated material, and Carla said, nope, don't touch it.
That's great. When you were at NIU, did you get the chance to go back out to Laredo Taft ever?
I did with other aspects. So I'm a birder.
Yes.
So I take some of my students or former students, I meet them at Laredo Taft, because one of my former students finished at Highland, did some work in other states, and then got a job at Laredo Taft. So I found my way to Laredo Taft, and now I'm working on trying to save it again.
I was going to ask about that. I wrote about that at the time, about the Outdoor Education Center there. I was curious if when you were at NIU, you got the chance to go back out there, lay down and look up at the snow again, you know?
I haven't laid back in the snow again, but it's sad to see that it is not supported in the way we hoped, but I'm hopeful that another group can bring it back.
The birder thing I did want to ask you about too, because actually it's something that I have become much more interested in the last couple of years because my father-in-law is an avian ecologist. And so he's a very, you know, birds is his life's work. And so just naturally the osmosis of the, you know, like enthusiasm and knowledge there has gotten me more interested in it. And so I was like, I have to ask about Bird City stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's always funny to tell people how I got into birding because I took a class at NIU called Birds and Mammals because I wanted to learn about mammals. I said, I'm taking this class for mammals. Who cares about birds? And it was one lab, a field trip, that we went outside and I saw an osprey. Our teacher said, like, quietly look up, and there was an osprey tearing apart a tree, or tearing apart a fish. And I was blown away to see this wild, giant bird eating a fish right in front of us, and we oblivious to us just watching it. And that's my spark bird. So after that,
spark bird. I love that.
Yeah, the bird that got you into birding. After that, then I just became obsessed with it. And I realized my hearing changed. I walked around campus and I noticed birds I never noticed before. And I like to continue that. So, I mean, I have a few students who keep in touch with me who are in birding jobs, and they do credit me for inspiring them to go into birding, so that always makes me happy.
Carla, has she gotten you into birding at all? Have you found a spark bird yet?
I haven't found my spark bird. I'm, like I said, I'm a visual person, so I'm not great sometimes at hooking up the names with the birds. And but yes, definitely my interest has peaked, and so I'm always sending her, oh, look, I found this bird, and everybody else under the sun is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
She did remind me of, I did have a little bit of women that inspired me at U of I.
Yeah, please.
When I was a senior, there was an opportunity to take a class, and it was called Project Search, science education and research for children. And the goal of it was, Dr. Joan Dawson actually started it with a grant. The goal was to go to like elementary schools and help teachers teach science lessons, because they didn't necessarily have a lot of science background. And so I ended up teaching in a couple places, one of which was the Boys and Girls Club in an after school activity. So I guess I did have a little bit of an interest that, and then I had another woman, Dr. Marina Marjanovic, and she really pushed me in and kind of inspired me and kind of encouraged me to apply to grad school for the teaching. And then they actually ended up giving me an assistantship in directing the program, or organizing the program and organizing all the students to where they would go. So that actually paid my way through grad school.
At its best, I wonder if, like, especially since you've had so many people in the club over the past, you know, like almost 10 years now, that you've had people go through it, then become, you know, women in science, right? Like, people pursue professional fields in it, that, like, it can kind of be a self-perpetuating thing where people go through the program, they start their career in science, and then, you know, maybe they get to come back and talk to people, you know, talk to the students you have now. And so it kind of becomes that circle.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah. We just have for meetings, we'll just have someone talk to our club, you know, just kind of a Zoom conversation.
And sometimes more recent graduates versus further in their career, and I think that gives them a lot of comparison. Like, okay, they're still in the career, just like, or still in school, and it's challenging, but then they see it's worth the challenges, worth the struggles to get to where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the common challenges that people come to talk to the group about?
Probably just kind of fitting in at the next level after Highland and kind of finding their way, finding out what they want to do, how they want to get involved, finding research opportunities if they want to do that, or just, you know, finding something that will still set them apart, get them involved. I'm thinking of maybe Julia, who went to the University of Minnesota after here, studying neurology, and then she was talking about, you know, things that she was doing at the University of Minnesota. But Highland really, I think, served her well. She was actually a great teacher. When we had kids come in one time, she and some other of my students were teaching them, and I just kind of said, here, teach them about this, and then they literally just ran with it and just, you know, taught with more enthusiasm than I probably ever would have. So they were really into it. But
yeah. And then you mentioned, obviously, there's a part of it, too, that's just about, like, learning about women in science, you know, prominent women scientists. Obviously, like, the whole, you know, story of kind of the history of science, with that being that, you know, women and people from marginalized community have their work either kind of erased or minimized. And so even like in 2026, I'm sure there's a lot of people where, you know, you start to learn about these, you know, historical women, or, you know, women in science over the last century or centuries, and they're like, oh my God, I had no idea, right?
Yeah.
Well, I had no idea that the Okazaki fragments were named after a couple, actually, man and wife, who studied DNA.
Sometimes when the club members are choosing their poster, it's always interesting who they choose, because that's someone that inspires them. But that's also humbling, because they're choosing more recent scientists, and you're like, oh, we're learning more about some recent people, and then you realize how long we've been in teaching. But it's fun when they choose someone like Jane Goodall, someone who might have inspired us as well, and Marie Curie, of course. But it's fun to see who else they've investigated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like, hopefully they're picking people who are, like, active now,
yes,
you know?
Like Nobel Prize winners a year ago they're choosing.
And I was just curious for both of you, if you have something over the past couple weeks that, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be, like, a funny story or, like, a profound story, but just a moment where you feel like things went really well and you were reminded, like, oh, this is why I like doing this.
Amy Fairweather from our marketing department came in to get some photos of my science class and teaching microbiology, and I know she came into your biology class. And so we were working in the lab, and she was taking pictures, but everybody was smiling, but But they weren't necessarily smiling for the camera. They were smiling because we were having so much fun doing our gram stains and what they were finding through the microscope. And, you know, when people actually get the success of being able to make that stain and see it for themselves, they really do feel like scientists, plus they're wearing coats and lab goggles.
They feel like they're doing science.
Yes, yeah. And so we just, I mean, we just really have a blast in there. I just find it to be so fun, and so do they. So we're learning too, I promise. But so just seeing their faces, it was just really cute and really fun, and it was neat.
The only one that really jumps out is I had a student named Hannah Badgett, and she was the one that I mentioned at Laredo Taft. But I mean, even just a recent text saying, I got this job at such and such place, and I think it just reminds me how she's working hard to get where she's at, but she also keeps in touch to thank me. And I think those kind of things remind you of why you like being a teacher. You hope that you, whatever letter or recommendations that you helped with, actually help them, because sometimes you write the letter and then you don't know if they got the job.
Right, so,
so it's kind of nice to get that email back or message back. And what's really fun is, you know, knowing I could see her out there, like I could go visit her at her job, and it's neat to keep in touch with students that way.
Yeah, I had a student a few years ago, Isaiah, and I had him for anatomy class, and he went into nursing, and then he decided he didn't really want to be a nurse, but he really liked looking at slides, said no one ever. And so then he became a biology major. So then he went through the biology majors course and graduated in biology here. He actually got the Life Science Award a couple years ago. And then he went on, he's at NIU now, and he did email me to let me know he has been accepted to med school. So that letter, hopefully, you know, helped in some way. And then at graduation, I actually met his mother, who I realized I had in microbiology class back in 2010, 2011, or something like that.
We're
and
in
so,
that range now.
It was just kind of cool.
And kids in the class.
So, yeah, but I could tell that he was, you know, a really strong student. He was really interested, and I really think the idea of him, he wants to be a pathologist. And so he just decided that, and now he's at NIU and really pursuing, you know, research interests and all those kinds of things. So
that's got to be so cool for you guys to see, you know, people starting their journey and over the course of the couple of years that they're at Highland go from like maybe someone who's unsure about what they want to do, and they maybe have a vague curiosity about science or feel like they have some kind of aptitude, to, you know, maybe starting to have some realizations about some potential options they have.
When we have our speakers, we had such a wide variety. We've had medical doctor, veterinarian, nurse practitioner. What's the
infectious disease control nurse?
Yeah, during COVID, we had infectious disease speaker. So the other aspect is showing all the different varieties of careers too.
Had some chemical engineers.
Right, chemical engineer. What's the geo?
Oh, micropaleontologist, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, but she was talking about how she was a woman, and her job, she was working on an oil rig, and she was the only woman on the ship or whatever it is. They would drill into the ocean floor and they would get these core samples, and her job was to look at different levels and identify what type of micro small fossils there were, and that would determine where they should actually drill for oil. Wow. Because she could tell how old something was based on just looking at these samples and studying microbes that were fossilized and telling them where to drill.
One of her challenges was they had to make a bathroom just for her, having one woman on the ship. That's got to be hard when you're the only female in a man's work at that time.
I wouldn't have lasted a day. I did think of my own kids who all have gone through Highland, and, you know, they grew up with two science teachers, so.
Two science teachers, you said?
Yes, my husband teaches biology at Freeport High School.
Oh, so they just can't avoid it then.
They cannot avoid it.
So are they interested in it and want to pursue, or is it like, oh, this is the family business, I have to get away from biology?
I guess none of them are technically teachers. My oldest daughter's a speech pathologist, okay. So she pursued that. And then one of my twin daughters is a medical lab scientist. And then another one is back in school for radiography.
Okay.
And then my son, the lone boy, is studying chemical engineering.
Did they go to Highland? Like, do you ever get
yes,
the chance to teach them?
Yes, they all went to Highland. I only taught anatomy to my twin daughters. So
did they like that, or?
They did, I think so, yes. So it was during COVID, and they were set to take all online classes, and I said, listen, you need to take an in-person class because you need to figure out how to take tests and that kind of thing and how to study, and so anatomy was a good option. They both needed it for their school, so it also paid off.
Freeport High School and have
yes.
their dad,
oh,
too?
Yes, they all, yes, all four children.
Can you imagine? Yeah, do you feel like you've evolved a lot as a teacher?
I think so. I mean, at first, the first year teaching college is rough. You know, everything's new. You know, three new classes and all, just even physically just putting together lectures and things like that, let alone kind of trying to master the material, is really difficult. So I just feel more comfortable with the material itself. And so then I'm trying to kind of step back and slow down a little because I realized, like, you know, just because I know something doesn't mean that it's gonna, I know this in fact, but that it's going to get to their ears like I want it to. And so I've been trying to do more things like show more visuals or talk, but also maybe write on the board. And just because I know students need to hear things different ways. And I'm just trying to kind of slow down a little bit myself because as you do get better with material, it's easy to just kind of go quickly too.
Right, so like kind of just go through the motions and like, oh, I've done this. Is there a certain thing that you look to or try to do if you're again, feeling maybe just a little bit exhausted by the process and doing things that were to try to like relight that spark a little bit? Are there things that you can go to or maybe things like the club can help with that?
I think especially having a variety of classes that we rotate around, it helps when you have... If you have the same class every year, I think it's easy to fall into that rut. But when I mentioned I'm teaching a biology major, like those are a whole different aspect. You can walk in, they're already excited. Where if non-majors, they're still fun to teach, but you have to find something to pique their interest right away. And then it's just even more fun when they get it. They realize, I might be a business major or accounting major, but I really had fun looking at the cell slides today.
Yeah. Yeah, but I want them at least to say, like, oh, I loved my science class. That was so fun. And not like, oh, you know, I hate science. And
right. So yeah, I think you don't get that too much.
Oh. Well, sometimes at first, but then I usually can turn them around a little bit.
You can win them over.
Yeah. I think the clubs do help because we get to talk to them. Like, outside of class, you get to know who they are so that they're more personable to you. And then you realize, okay, they're not just bored. They're just focused. And I think our events are fun. Earth Club, same thing. They love just getting involved with what they can do here on campus. So yeah, it's you are going to get into those. I'm exhausted, but then you do get back up.
Are there any events that you guys have coming up that we're particularly excited about, or things that maybe have happened recently?
Well, Women's History Month, we're doing the trivia, and
yes,
then we're
showing a movie, showing a Picture movie. A Scientist. We'll have snacks. What's snacks always bring the crowd. Do you want to explain it? You found it.
This film, I can't think of what year, maybe within the 10 years,
yeah.
But it documents 3 to 4 scientists sharing their experiences in a world of sexual harassment, inequality, and some of the stories are pretty intense where you realize they were treated poorly just by being a woman in the science field. And there's some recent scientists, but then there's some that show just the longevity of how long it's been going through. So we always open up to campus for people to see, like the name of the title, Picture a Scientist. That's a big thing that's been going around too. When you say picture a scientist, who do you think of first? And a lot of people might think a male in a lab coat, but they did this similar thing to kids, and they were all drawing a variety of different genders and ages, so I think people are seeing it differently now. Like my daughter, when she says scientist, she thinks of mommy. So I think that's the important part of what we do too, showing that anyone can be a scientist. But that movie, I think the movie makes you angry, but then inspired.
Yeah, throughout. I showed it to my biology major's class, or I had it as an assignment where they had to watch it, and then they did a discussion forum posting about it and what their thoughts were. And it was interesting to see a lot of the male students were really mad, even relative to the female students.
Right. But that, you know, like, anyone can do science or anyone can be a scientist thing is, again, something that, like, if you just tell someone that, they're like, well, yeah, intuitively, I know that. But there's something very different and a different kind of connection to actually, like, you know, be able to get to know you guys or get to know all the speakers that you have to, like, be like, not just, I know, you know, in general, anyone could be a scientist, right. But also here are these, you know, very diverse sets of scientists that we've been able to talk to or connect with.
They also see that a lot of women have to prove themselves, even though they might have the same credentials and education. And I mean,
is that something that you feel like you've had to do as well?
I mean, when I started teaching at 22, and I made a point to make sure, I don't know if it was just in my head, but I wanted them to call me Miss D'Souza, is just to give me some credential. And I always wore professional clothing, so I fit the part more to prove myself. And, you know, you walk into the room and you don't know what kind of judgment they'll have right away. I remember some people saying, oh, you're my teacher? And I think it could have been because of my age or color of my skin. So you never know what to expect, so I always try to make sure I prove myself every time, the first day of school.
Is there something about teaching science and being a science teacher that you just think is more important than people realize, something you wish more people knew about it, just anything that you feel like is still maybe somehow a cliche or something you wish more people knew?
Making sure that everybody gets back to the basic concepts. I guess you can't assume that anyone necessarily understands always what you're talking about. So just making sure that, you know, the scope is the big picture plus then all the fine details, but then always getting back to that big picture, because just because you say something, again, doesn't mean that your students are necessarily understanding you.
Right, but they might come back to you with what is 6 inches?
right, exactly. But getting them to figure out what they do know and what they don't know, and then, you know, not being worried about asking questions. You know, sometimes they say, oh, this is a stupid question. I say, nope, it's not a stupid question. You know, just... You need to, you know, I need to know what you know, and we need to go from there.
Right. Being comfortable asking questions is, especially I think in science, people get a little intimidated sometimes.
My favorite thing is just trying to show them how science and biology relates to their daily life. And I think my ecology background also, just trying to protect what we have is important. But reminding them, well, where does your oxygen come from? Oh, right, plants help and algae helps produce that. And I think making the relevance helps them realize that that science is everywhere, but then getting outside in nature. I mean, those kind of things are what I hope that they leave with. If they're just taking one class from me or more than one, I hope they leave there with a more appreciation of science and those who helped pave the way to learn about the aspects of science, because when you name these scientists, like even penicillin, you know, something like that, they realize, oh yeah, I survived my infection because some scientists figured out this fungus. And I think little things like that they can touch upon.
That was Juliet Modero and Carla Jeffrey. They're biology instructors at Highland Community College in Freeport and the team behind the Women Plus in Science Club. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our guests like Carla and Juliet. So please send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Wherever you're hearing the podcast, please subscribe, leave us a rating, or share it. It's the best way to get even more perspectives on the show. All the music you've been hearing today is from the Northern Illinois band Kind Of, so thank you so much to them. And I have been your host, Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. Thanks so much.